Hello, and welcome to Bookstore Explorer, the show where we go behind the shelves with indie booksellers to find out what makes indie bookshops such magical places. I'm author and bookseller Matt Browning, and this week I'm joined by author and bookseller Danny Kane. Now, Danny is majority owner of the Raven Bookstore in Lawrence, Kansas, and in this episode, we're going to learn all about that shop. But Danny is also a bit of a viral author. He published a zine a few years ago called How to Resist Amazon and Why. And it sort of blew up to the point that Danny expanded that into a full-length book. And later this month, he's back with a brand new book called How to Protect Bookstores and Why. We'll talk about that book in part two with Danny coming out next week. But first, let's go bookstore exploring and learn about the Raven Bookstore. Danny, thanks for coming on to Bookstore Explorer.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt.
I have to be honest, sometimes when I book a guest and I start doing my pre-show research, it can sometimes be a little tough to find really good information, but I did not have that problem this week.
This is not the first interview I've done about The Raven, which is great. I love it. I really love talking to folks. It's been really fun to see the store get some attention over the last couple of years and to have people respond to what we're saying so well and so often.
Well, let's talk about attention. You were the 2022 Publishers Weekly Bookstore of the Year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment. How did that feel? How did that feel to get that kind of acknowledgement?
Oh, it was a huge honor. Probably the pinnacle of my bookselling career. I mean, it's hard to imagine it getting much bigger than that, to get such national recognition and to be in such great company of the other stores that have won it. It was a huge honor. We were all very excited and very proud, and our community was pretty thrilled. I mean, it felt pretty within the University of Kansas Jayhawks men's basketball team won the national championship a couple months before we won that award. So it felt like champion season in Lawrence, and we were really proud to bring another one home. I wish we would have gotten a parade. We were trying to figure out how to do it because they got a parade, but we had a parade of lovely customers coming into the store to wish us congratulations.
Well, I'll confess, your championship is more up my alley, clearly. So at the top of each show, before we dive into the actual store and its story, I like to have my guests sort of walk us through the physical layout of the shop so that listeners can sort of get a picture in their mind of what it looks like. So can you walk us through The Raven?
Yeah, well, The Raven is in a location that's been in for 2 years. The store has been there for 37 years. But in 2 years ago, the summer of 2021, we moved to a new spot right on Massachusetts Street, which is kind of the iconic main drag in downtown Lawrence. And our inspiration, the store is kind of naturally split into two halves, front and back. It's a long and skinny kind of classic Main Street storefront. And up front, the main entrance where the adult books are, we were inspired by the classic, small town storefront vibe, a little bit of a library vibe, an old school library vibe, a little bit of just that kind of classic American retail storefront. And part of that inspiration was because we were able, it's been there since the 1860s, and we were able to salvage a lot of we moved in after a fire forced the preceding business to close down, which is really sad, but it was a good opportunity to kind of move into the space of our dreams. And after the fire, we were able to salvage the original hardwood floors and the original pressed tin ceiling. And so we use those as kind of our guiding focus for the stately wooden bookcases and the milk glass light fixtures. And then in the back, was a little bit more of a white box, when we got to it. So we kind of went crazy with the children's section, and I was inspired by kind of the Memphis Modern movement in the 1980s, which is what, if you're not familiar with Memphis Modern, it's what a Taco Bell in the 1990s looked like with the bold, colors and the geometric shapes. And so we really wanted to do a playful and kind of modern, kids section. And so there's a big plywood wall, with these cutouts. There are some like shape cutouts up high where you can display books, and there are reading nooks that are cut out where people can sit and read. And it's really fun and bright. And so it's a little bit of a store of two personalities, and right in the middle is the kind of heart of it all, where there's our cash register. We have a giant custom neon sign, which was always my dream. I wanted a custom neon sign, but it's a big neon book that's open with kind of light radiating out of it. So we're really proud of the space. It took us a long time and a lot of money to renovate it, but it is kind of our dream location. And we wanted to honor the kind of historic, importance of Main Street small businesses and bookstores, and also kind of look towards the future. So I think the design does both.
Now, speaking of history, and you just mentioned it, this shop predates you by a few decades, right?
Oh, no, I predate the store by 1 year. So I was born in 1986 and the store was born in 1987. But yeah, I mean, it's not young. Either am I.
So let's go back to the very beginning. What can you tell me, you know, before you arrived at the store, which was as a customer, I understand. But
right. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the very beginning of the store? Who opened it? What inspired them? And I'm going to assume the Raven comes from where I think it comes from.
Yeah. Well, it was two college friends after careers doing other things, midway through those careers, decided to team up and open a mystery only bookstore in downtown Lawrence. And at the time in the 80s, Lawrence was home to maybe 6 or 7 independent bookstores. And really at the time in the 80s, independent bookstore wasn't quite as much of a common term as it is now. They just called them bookstores because the chains weren't quite as powerful quite yet. They would be soon, which is part of the Raven story. But yeah, I mean, there's a travel bookstore, kind of the queer anarchist bookstore, the general interest bookstore with a lot of magazines, but they loved reading mysteries, and they didn't see a bookstore in Lawrence serving that community. So they decided to open it up, focusing almost entirely on mysteries and local titles. And as the 90s came on, it was a really hard time for bookstores towards the second half of the 90s. So about 10 years into the Raven, a Borders superstore opened in downtown Lawrence, and that took care of almost all of the other bookstores downtown. And because of that, the Raven expanded both in terms of its space and in terms of what it carried. And it became really the only general interest new bookstore in downtown Lawrence. And they expanded their offerings and their service because of that. But yeah, I mean, it's always been welcoming. It's always had a strong point of view. And it's always been focused on what independent bookstores do best, which is a little bit of community service, a little bit of promoting good books and literacy, and a little bit of advocacy, as well as just a really pleasant and engaging in-store experience.
So then let's jump ahead to when you first walked in the door of the Raven, which was as a customer, right?
Yeah. I was moving to Lawrence to get an MFA at the University of Kansas to get my poetry degree. And we were in town just for the weekend to shop for apartments. And we were spent taking a break by poking around downtown. And I was like, oh, cool, there's a bookstore here. As we walk in, the owner and a bookseller named Kelly, the owner was soon to be my boss. And Kelly still works at the Raven all these years later. We're trimming the nails of a very petulant and fat tabby cat who was just screaming his head off. And they were kind of thrashing around and wrestling him and trying to trim his claws. And I was like, I think I'm going to like this place.
As a cat owner, that's not an uncommon sign.
Yeah, I'm not even a huge cat person, which is kind of funny because cats are such a big part of the Raven brand. But it was just weird and funny. And it was a space. It just felt like a space for misfits kind of right away. And it had such a strong personality just by walking in and seeing them wrestling with the cat. I was like, well, this is a unique retail experience. And yeah, I fell in love as a customer, started working really hard to get a job there and did, and then fell in love with the business and ended up just taking over.
What year did you take over?
2017.
So prior to that, had you had any bookselling experience?
No, I was kind of on the fast track to be a teacher. And I even taught high school after I graduated from undergrad. I tried teaching college through my grad programs. And I just was, I was pretty much done teaching. I don't think it was a great fit for me. I have all the love in the world for teachers and good ones. I just felt like I couldn't do it. It was wearing me down pretty quick. So I was looking for other things. And it ended up being this part-time job at the Raven that really kind of defined my future. I was really looking forward to shifts. I loved my coworkers. I loved going to work. I loved working events and helping to order books and designing displays and just all of it. It felt like a really great space. And then I, you know, started to meet people from other bookstores, and it was just an amazing community. I mean, you spend all this time talking to booksellers. You understand how cool these folks are and what a great community is. And so it just felt like what I wanted my professional home to be was at the Raven and in the bookstore industry in general.
How much time passed between, you know, let's say your first day as a part-time bookseller to your first day as owning the business?
About 2.5 years.
Did you feel equipped in that length of time to be able to, I can successfully do this?
Well, as much as I could. And there are still days where I don't feel like that, where some particular challenge will throw me for a loop. But that's, I think, part of the fun of it. I'm not the kind of person who can work a job where it's the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. But I mean, my boss, Heidi, who's still a friend, even after selling the business to me and moving on, we still keep in touch. She was kind of convinced that I was going to buy the store before I was convinced. She was ready to retire. She really wanted to send it to me. And I was like, let's slow down. This is a big thing. This is very different from what I thought I was going to be doing with my life. So I went to Book Expo in New York City that year, kind of 2 years after I started. I took the PAS and Associates training course in Florida, and I just did a ton of research. I talked to mentors. I talked to lawyers and accountants, and I really, you know, my heart was like, I want to do this, but my brain was like, I got to make sure this is a good idea. Cause I mean, it was, Heidi really made it work for me financially, but it was still a bigger financial thing than I had ever done, really. I mean, to this date, the largest check I've ever written in my life was for the down payment for the Raven. It was just, and again, Heidi was making it work for me, and it was making it as easy as possible, but it was still a really big deal. So I was as prepared as I could be, but I don't think there's any way to be totally prepared for doing something as complicated and as interesting as running a bookstore in the early 21st century.
You mentioned a moment ago that you recently moved to a bigger space, right?
Uh-huh.
So obviously you've been doing something correct. If you came to the point where like, okay, we've kind of, I'm assuming, outgrown your other location. We need something bigger. Is that how it was?
Yeah. Well, what really did that was it was a pandemic decision. And so it was, I mean, throughout the pandemic, it was our goal to keep everybody as safe as possible and to keep everybody employed if we could. And we did. And I'm proud to say that we didn't have to furlough anybody or let anybody go. People's jobs look different. So a lot of part-timers ended up driving deliveries instead of working in the store. But we were able to keep everybody on the payroll. But part of keeping everybody safe was that we shut down completely to customers, to browsing from March of 2020 to July of 2021. So more than a year. And in that time, we really grew and developed our online audience and kind of converted the Raven into a virtual experience that people could get the Raven experience as well as possible online. And the physical manifestation of that was converting the entire store into basically a warehouse. Mm-hmm. We had stations for packing and printing labels and receiving. For a time, we even had like a walk-up window at the store where you could walk up and pick up your orders. And then that was great. I mean, people were so supportive, and we were able to kind of maintain a sales level enough that we could keep everybody on board. But once it became time, once everybody was vaccinated, and once the kind of critical mass was pointing towards stores opening back up, we didn't have room to be a good browsing experience and a good online experience. So part of it was a bigger sales floor is nice, but the main thing, it's kind of nerdy, but the main thing we needed in the new location was a receiving and shipping room to kind of run our website. Web sales are still over 20% of what we do. Hmm. Before the pandemic, they were less than 1%.
Yeah.
So that's an important enough part of our business that we needed it, like the physical reality of putting books into boxes and that many books coming in and out. We just built a back room with two computer stations in it where people are basically working all day to receive the books coming in and process the books going out via mail or delivery.
I was going to ask how big is your staff, but it would sort of maybe interfere with my next question, which was, you know, we've been referring to you as the owner of the shop, but I guess your current official title is majority owner,
right?
Because it's an employee owned shop. So tell us what that means.
Well, and I even prefer part owner. Well, technically I am the majority owner, but we really try to do things by consensus and working together. So it's, it really is a team effort to make the kind of global decisions about the Raven. But in January of 2022, a group of employees bought about half the store, 49% of the store, through an arrangement where basically they only make payments on the loan. I loan the money to them to buy their shares in the store, and they repay me only out of profits. So they only repay the loan when they get profit sharing if the store has a profitable year. So what it meant was there was no money out of pocket. Like, I was fortunate enough to be able to write that check to Heidi when I bought the store, but it's, that's not reality for, I would argue, most people that work in bookstores. But I wanted to create a situation where people interested in having a career in bookselling could. I'm working on that industry-wide as part of my work on the American Booksellers Association board, but I also wanted to do it kind of at home. So we had a really talented core of managers and a couple super experienced booksellers, and I wanted to make sure to find ways to incentivize them staying at the Raven. Because for so often retail work or bookselling work, it's like you do it for a couple of years and it's fun and great, but then like you have to go get a job with a more sustainable future where you can make more money and get benefits. And it's really hard, the way the industry is set up, it's really hard to make that happen for booksellers. And this is just one idea we had to try to create a little bit more of a lasting career opportunity for these great folks at the Raven. So yeah, right now the ownership group is me and five others. And we work really closely together every day. Everybody's got committees and teams that they're on. And then we come together as a whole team when we have global decisions about the store to make. And we've made it through some really tough and challenging times together. It's a little bit, we're making it up as we go along. The way like the US tax code and the way just capitalism in general is set up, they don't want you to run an employee-owned business. Like, it doesn't make business school sense for me to give up shares of a profitable business like this. But it felt like the right thing, and I wanted to help, and I wanted to recognize the team at the Raven for their amazing contributions.
And I imagine they have embraced this model themselves and it's going well.
Oh, yeah. And they've really turned into great leaders and managers, and they have such innovative ideas. I mean, it in a way, it makes my job not easier, but more interesting because they have such great ideas, and it takes the pressure off of me to kind of steer the ship. It's nice to have people to bounce ideas off of and discuss things. And often things end up being done in a way that I wouldn't do it. But just because I would do it that way doesn't mean it's the right way at all. I don't want to be the be all end all for the Raven. You know, I'm just one part of this really long story that features a lot of great people.
We haven't talked a lot yet about the books themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, about how many books do you stock? Do you know that number?
We're at around 15,000 right now. I mean, we've got some event stock and some back stock, but when I run the inventory report every month, it usually coughs up about 15,000 books.
And it's all new books, right?
Yep.
And I assume, do you have like gifts, sign line items,
things like that? Yeah, I think we're 10 to 12% sidelines, maybe up to 15 around the holidays.
So what sells well for you? I imagine if you're a general interest bookshop, all the genres are covered, but what tends to sell well?
Our bread and butter is local, especially local nonfiction. Mm-hmm. So right now, I mean, we run a bestseller list in our local newspaper every other week. And the last four or five lists have all been topped by this book called Embattled Lawrence 2. And we're the only bookstore in the country that sells it. And I love books like this, where it's just us. It's so local where it's selling like crazy for us and it's not selling literally anywhere else. But in Battle Lawrence too, this local historian and retired academic named Dennis Domer, got together 30 of his friends to write essays about the history of Lawrence. And these are pretty scholarly rigorous and they're well edited. And the book itself is a big kind of 400 page, nice, kind of statement object. And it's well designed and well put together. But it's topped the charts for the last 2 months since it came out. We're selling it by the hundreds. And you know, that's it. We had another great story with the Lady Bird Diner, which is in Lawrence. It's, they're friends of ours. They're this great kind of modern diner. And in the pandemic, when they shut down, they converted to basically a food pantry and we're giving away free meals, free lunches every day for 2 years. And the owner wrote a collection of essays about the experience of running the diner and getting through the pandemic. It's called Lady Bird Collected. And I mean, we sold 1,000 copies of Lady Bird Collected. So aside from that, in terms of things that other people sell too, genre fiction is really having a moment. We're selling a lot of horror, romance, and science fiction are all, I think that's people got into kind of escapist reading during the pandemic and they followed it. And there's also just a ton of great, if you're queer or you're a reader of color, there are so many great options for you in those genres right now. And there are a lot of really great boundary pushing, super interesting. It's just kind of a golden age, especially for science fiction. There's just such amazing stuff coming out right now. And we've got a couple, we have really, really talented booksellers that kind of focus in each of those genres. Yeah, and kids. I mean, we're probably 20% of our sales are kids. We have a really amazing children's manager who does all the ordering for the kids section. And again, beautiful picture books, really smart graphic novels and YA novels. And we have a really good community of local YA authors that we're really close with, that we work together closely. So yeah, we sell a lot. But I would say the biggest and most exciting genres right now in terms of sales are local nonfiction, always, kids books, and genre fiction for adults.
So when I ask this next question, I have readers or listeners come back and tell me, oh, I heard about this book on your podcast that so-and-so recommended. I love it. So I always like to ask, what are some of your favorite titles that you sort of keep in the back of your mind to hand sell when a customer wants you to recommend something and, you know, may or may not give you a whole lot to go on?
I love the novels of James McBride. I think he's probably my favorite novelist right now. He had one come out a week ago on Tuesday called The Heaven and Earth Grocery Store. Mm-hmm.
Which I had just started today.
It's so amazing. And then Deacon King Kong was his most recent one. And then the one before that was called The Good Lord Bird, which is absolutely one of my favorite novels. And the thing about James McBride is they're so funny. They're really ambitious. They're very literary. He really, you know, kind of shoots for the stars and accomplishes a lot in his narrative aims. I mean, The Good Lord Bird retells the entire story of James Brown, or no, John Brown. He also wrote a book about James Brown, but John Brown, the abolitionist, through this fictional character of this escaped slave. And this historical reimagining that happens in this book is so ambitious and incredible, but it's also just like kind of a rip-roaring, fun adventure story. And lately, it seems like he's been writing these really warm and boisterous pictures of these communities, often Black communities. They're so fun. They're so funny. They're so full of heart. I think anyone really, whether you're a serious literary reader who kind of reads like all the Booker Prize winners every year, you're going to love James McBride. But if you just want like a fun book that's generous in human spirit, I think James McBride really works too. So I think he's got such a broad appeal. Then another book I love, another favorite hand sell is Lunch Poems by Frank O'Hara, which is an old poetry book. It was published by City Lights in the 50s, but still in print, still beloved. And again, this is probably reflective of my tastes, but someone who's very gregarious and warm and funny. And the conceit behind Lunch Poems is that Frank O'Hara was a curator at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, or no, at MoMA. He was a curator at MoMA when they were kind of at the forefront of the abstract expressionist movement. So he was friends with all these amazing painters. But every day on his lunch break, so the legend goes, he would walk around in New York City and kind of absorb the rhythm and the energy and the pulse of the town, and like kind of write these quick, approachable poems on his typewriter. That's why they're called lunch poems, because they're written on his lunch break. So they're filled with art. They're filled with these great little city encounters. They're filled with interesting characters. And it's like literally a pocket-sized book. The City Lights poetry series to this day is called Pocket Poets. But the trim size is small enough that you can kind of take it with you. It's a really good book to just like have in your pocket or in your purse to revisit from time to time. So James McBride, Frank O'Hara, those are two things. Everybody has a lot. They have a stable, but right now, yeah. Those are the two ones off the top of my head.
The Frank O'Hara, I get a lot of my own reading from asking that question.
Nice.
McBride, I can echo. And it sounds like the new one is great too. Like I said, I just started up like 5 pages in. So
yeah.
So don't spoil anything.
Okay.
But I love Beacon King Kong. That's what really got me
it's
into
an amazing
his work.
Book.
So the last question that I usually ask, and you mentioned in one of your books that you usually take a little more of a pragmatic view to such things. So this question might push you out of that zone a little bit. But, you know, I started doing Bookstore Explorer as a hashtag on my personal Instagram like years ago when I would just travel and wander into a bookshop as a hobby, right? And you start talking to people and everybody would say, oh, bookstores are magical places. And it's a phrase that has stuck. So I always ask each guest, what does it mean to you when you hear somebody describe a bookshop as a magical place?
Well, I think it's a bookstore. There, I have a good friend named Jeff Deutsch who runs the Seminary Co-op bookstore in Chicago.
His book I've also read.
Right. Yeah. And his book, In Praise of Good Bookstores, has a really kind of thoughtful examination of how bookstores are designed to slow you down. And the product, if you ask him, he would say the product is not the books, but the browsing experience. And so this is a space that's thoughtfully designed to kind of shut out the world and make you engage with other people, with good books, with an environment that's like purposefully and intentionally thoughtful, welcoming, relaxing. And so I think it's 100% by design. A good bookstore, if it feels magical, is because it's like people thoughtfully created that space to create that feeling. And that's amazing. It should feel magic because so little of the world is designed like that. Whether it's social media that's designed to keep you scrolling or to fuel your outrage machine, or these public spaces that are really just kind of designed to make you spend money, or view ads, or just be part of a cog in this giant machine. A bookstore is very specifically designed to do something else, to remove you from that world and to put you into a world that values diversity, good ideas, good writing, art, connection with other people. And so, like, I think it's pragmatic because we design it that way, but it also is magical because it's so unlike everything else.
It sounds, just listening to you talk about The Raven, it's pretty evident that it is a community hub and staple. This is coming out in September, so we're sliding rapidly towards fall and rapidly towards the holiday season. So what's coming up next down the pike for The Raven?
Well, I mean, we've got a ton of great events coming up, even into September. I know we're teaming up with the Lawrence Public Library on their Booktoberfest to bring a couple amazing authors to town, one of whom is Nathan Hill, who his new book is called Wellness. It's just incredible. It's this huge kind of statement novel of ideas about gentrification and love and what happens to a marriage as it ages. And Nathan's a great guy. He came before for his novel, his first novel called The Knicks, which is also amazing. I think Wellness is even better. And then it really is a great fall of for books. And so we just hope to see people out shopping early for Christmas because that helps us a lot. But it really is a fun time for us. The store is full of good books and great people. And the holidays can be stressful, but we really do enjoy fall. And that's when bookstores like make or break. From September, from now until the end of the year, is when we are going to see if it's a profitable year or not. And we just hope to see folks and help connect you with the right books for whatever reason.
So before we go, tell us where people can find The Raven. Toss out your website address, your social media handles, and any other ways to get in touch with you.
Yep. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Raven Bookstore, all one word. And we are at ravenbookstore.com. We're happy to send you books, help you out, whatever you need. And of course, we're always at 809 Massachusetts Street in lovely downtown Orange, Kansas.
And you are not going anywhere because we have a lot more to talk about. In addition to your bookstore, you've great. Written some great books that have sort of gone viral. So listeners, stay tuned. We're going to be talking more with Danny in our next episode.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Bookstore Explorer is produced and hosted by me, Matt Browning. Our theme music is Come Right Back to You by Max Hickson. You can follow all my bookstore explorations at bookstoreexplorer.com or on Instagram and Facebook at Bookstore Explorer. And follow us on Twitter at BookstoreExplr. Thanks for listening.